So initially, when they first hit the glass, they were quite different.
I was getting almost like a mentholated aspect to yours, like this herbalness.
Is mentholated a word? Did you say mentholated?
I think it is a word, right?
It probably is a word.
Mental? Menthol?
Mentholated? No, I like it. I'm going to use it.
Mentholated. We use that word when we're blending.
Mentholated. So close to a decade ago, Michael and I were in an Italian restaurant here in Sonoma County, and we were looking at the wine list, and we saw a local Sangiovese from Sonoma County on their menu, and that is pretty rare, and so we were excited, and we ordered the wine, and of course, it was fantastic with the meal, and I remember the label made an impression on me because it had sort of an old Italian painting on it that reminded me of a painting that hung in my aunt's kitchen in Brooklyn. So it just stuck with me. And as I was sitting there at the table, I said, well, who are these people? This Ramazzotti Sangiovese. And I looked them up and I found that their tasting room was literally about 8 minutes away from the restaurant where we were sitting. And so began the relationship with Michael and I and the Ramazzotti family. We, next weekend, I think, went to their tasting room. We met Joe and Norma, who are the owners and the founders and who were also pouring wine in the tasting room. We joined their wine club immediately and have been members ever since. And in the last 5 years or so, we have been able to get to know Travis Ramazzotti, their son, who is part of the family business, is a second generation. And we have been purchasing our Sangiovese grapes from them. So essentially, the Ramazzotti family are our growers who have enabled us to be able to make our Solovato Sangiovese. And they're a wonderful family who make wonderful wine. And they have a tasting room in Geyserville, which is a tiny little town in Sonoma County. So this week, I'm interviewing Travis Ramazzotti, who was a great sport and said he'd love to come on and talk about what it's like to be part of a family who's been growing grapes and making wines, and also share with us a little bit about his experience of being a second generation in a family business and what that's like. You'll also hear a new voice in this episode's Michael, my partner in life and business, is making his podcast debut. And so the three of us sat down this past Friday night in the Ramazzotti tasting room, which is a brand new space for them. And we tasted their 2021 Sangiovese and ours side by side because the grapes are from the same place, their estate, their vineyard, but our processes are a little bit different. So listen in as we hear about the Ramazzotti family story, as we get to know Travis and get his take on today's climate of the wine business, and as we talk about our two wines together. And don't forget, for this episode and all others, please leave us a rating, a review, and share it with someone who might get a kick out of it as well. Here we go with Travis Ramazzotti. We are here in Geyserville in the Ramazzotti's brand new, newly opened tasting room. And thank you for being open to doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. We've been talking about it for a while. So this was fun to do. And I'm glad we could all make it happen. Thank you for coming up to join me here and helping promote the new space and talk about some of our beautiful wines.
So let's start with this. So I've already told people a little bit about your family and the connection that we have with you guys. But I would love for you to share with our listeners just a little bit about, like, how did your family get started in this business here in California?
Thanks for asking. It's a pretty unique and wonderful story. So my father, his two siblings, and his parents, my grandparents, they immigrated over here in 1958 from the La Marche region of Italy. Kind of untraveled, unknown region of Italy. It's on the Adriatic, central in the country, but really a beautiful wine growing region. So they immigrated over here in 1958 and moved directly to a farmhouse that our god aunts had owned out in Dry Creek Valley. It was a functioning prune and grape ranch. She didn't have a husband, had no kids, so she needed my grandfather and his kids to come out and help run this ranch for them, which was how he was able to, they were able to get the paperwork and get them over here legally at that time. I mean, it took almost 8 years. They started in 1950, and it took 8 years to get that paperwork all done properly for them to actually come out and come move to the property. Went right to work as soon as they got out, picking prunes off the ground, which was what was predominantly grown in Dry Creek and Alexander Valley, actually, at that time. This whole valley used to be filled with prune orchards up until they figured out that grapes can make more money. So actually, people think that we were in the wine business in Italy. My family was. Actually, there was no wine whatsoever. My grandfather was a master welder for the Italian army during World War II, and then was also a butcher. So he did that. That was his work when they first came over.
So wine really started here in Sonoma County.
Correct.
For your family. Well, how cool is that?
And pretty much learned all the job. They talked with all the other local families, learned how to prune, you know, learned how to harvest, they were picking in the old school wooden crates back then, would load the wooden crates directly onto the flatbed trucks and then drive to the wherever the wineries were. And you had to drive far. There was only a really small handful of local.
It wasn't like now where you can throw a rock and hit another winery.
Right, exactly.
Less so in this area where you guys are. I mean, more so in like Napa, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what brought them to this area then was really the opportunity because your god aunt had the house.
Just by
That's
chance.
What led
her and it. Her siblings lived in the city, lived in San Francisco on Green Street. And that's where the first time ever being in a car, my godmother came, picked them up in a brand new Cadillac and got to go into her apartment there in the city. First time ever seeing a television. And then, boom, next day in the car, up to Dry Creek, right to work.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool.
And, none of them spoke English. None of them knew how to drive. So everything was learned here. My Aunt Maria, who works here in the tasting room with us.
Who we know as, do we know her as Marie? Maria?
Yes. Okay. Maria Lucia is her
exactly Italian. Exactly like your father, by the way.
Everybody knows her as Marie.
Yes. Is,
so. She was the oldest child, so she actually, at 12 years old, learned the English language in 2 weeks to translate and do all the legal paperwork.
Shame on us. Like, here. I'm still duolingoing it for Italian for our trip, and I can say, like, very little.
I mean, the whole trip is just, like, when you think about it, how amazing and impressive and scary that all must have been and how difficult that must have been. It's incredible. Every time I really think about it, I'm just like, how?
So this was in the late 50s.
Correct.
Okay. So then when is the Ramazzotti label and wine, when does that come into
play? Much further down the road. So my father, who was 8 when he came over, learned how to farm, learned about growing grapes, went to Chico State for viticulture, graduated in 1975, and then started vineyard managing in 1979.
Okay. Right around the time I was born.
Right. Started his business, Ramazzotti Vineyards, and has been managing vineyards since 1979.
Wow.
So think about that.
And the house that we know, your estate, your family home where we've been, when did they move to that property?
They moved to that property in 1985, where it was owned by another gentleman. He sold it to them in 1988.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I feel like we're coming around the time you were probably born.
Right. I was born a year after.
Estimate of your age is right.
1989. So exactly. The Sangiovese vineyard where that's planted on their property was planted in 1983.
Okay.
So that was the connection to that property. We were farming the neighboring property, and the gentleman who owned the current estate property saw that someone was farming it, came up, approached my dad, asked him to come and look at this piece of property and ask him if he would mind planting that hillside where the Sangiovese's grown. And he's like, oh, what do you think we should plant there? Should we plant Chardonnay? And my dad's like, oh, you know what? Chardonnay's not going to work. People were not liking the way Chardonnay was getting grown in that part of Dry Creek Valley. It wasn't doing very well. Still, there's not much Chardonnay in that upper part of Dry Creek right now. So he talked the guy out of it, and because of his Italian roots, he's always wanted to grow Sangiovese. None of his properties had Sangiovese. This was going to be one of his first hillside planting jobs, and so he talked the gentleman into doing Sangiovese. So that Sangiovese that we've been making from that hillside is planted in 1983. That's how old that is.
That's awesome.
I thought it was a little bit younger, but that's,
I think I did too.
4-year-old Sangiovese.
Yeah.
I think I've been saying younger than that.
So that property and then the neighboring property where you're currently getting your fruit, that was planted in 1993.
Yeah.
So it's that property is 10 years younger.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So my entire childhood was all farming. We never made any wine. They made a few little basement lots here and there, but half of it went to half of it turned into vinegar. Some of it, they filled in those 1 gallon jugs with the handles, but it was always the Rossi jugs. Those are always a little rough. So it was always vineyard and farming. Then tough economic times in the early 2000s. Grape sales plummeted. Mm-hmm. We could not sell the fruit. All of our contracts got canceled or came up and didn't get renewed. So in 2002, it must have been 2002, we just had all this fruit hanging on
the
line.
You're like a teenager at this time, but you're very aware of what's going on.
So I was just about to start high school.
Okay,
I'm just about to finish middle school, going to high school. So I didn't know what's going on.
Right.
I would always help as much as I could with the harvest. You know, I learned how to prune. That was always my summer job.
How old were you when you learned how to drive a tractor?
Pretty young.
Yeah.
Pretty young. I learned to drive a tractor when I was 13, and then my first vehicle was a Jeep Wrangler, which also was stick. So it was an easy transition from tractor to Jeep. So
awesome.
Yeah, and then that's how it all started. So 2002, we out of literally staying alive necessity. We decided to take the grapes that we couldn't sell, crush them at a custom crush facility, and then sell that wine. Because we didn't have a tasting room, it was all wholesale. So we were selling to grocery stores, restaurants as we can, online platforms, which weren't very many at that point. So it was mainly the old, grocery stores and whatever restaurants we can get into. At that time, we had three lots, Chardonnay, Merlot, actually 4 lots, Chardonnay, Merlot, Syrah, and then the Zin blend, our Recordo blend.
Okay.
Yeah. And we've just kind of refined it ever since. Our first storefront was 2008. We were down the street here in Geyserville at a collective.
Oh, yeah.
Collective.
The co-op place, yeah.
Co-op collective, called Locals,
mm-hmm.
which was very cool. That was actually one of my first jobs. I came home from college that first year. Worked in the shop and the
pouring wine in the tasting room.
No, I was only 18.
Oh, so
I was pouring anything. I was a stock boy.
Okay,
stocking wine.
You get the sexy job. You were stocking.
I got the stock boy job. Yeah, so it was a fun summer job because people were still in there. I still got to talk to people about the family wine. So it was just fun.
You were still immersed in it and around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did you go to school?
Southern California, San Diego State.
And so growing up surrounded by all this agriculture and farming, where you're like, I must study agriculure.
No, I didn't think that. I didn't think that at all. Well, San Diego's an amazing place, by the way. It's a tough place to not love. But they had a great business school, and I wasn't sure if I was going to indulge in the wine business. It seemed difficult, and I wasn't sure if that's where my passion was quite yet. But by the time I graduated, I realized that it was an amazing business and that I really did have a love for it. But still I was really enjoying the life I had down there. I was working service industry, I was working in kitchens, working in restaurants, front of the house, back of the house. I enjoyed that, the restaurant life as well, because I was also got to be a little bit involved in the wine. I got to learn and appreciate wine and talking about wine with people on the service side. But what that also allowed me to do was every harvest time of every year, I got to come home, take a couple months off from whatever I was doing in San Diego, help with the harvest, help make the wine, and really get an insight and learn firsthand about all the different aspects of it. And that's when I really fell in love with it. So I did that for about 3 years. And then in 2016, I finally moved back home and made the commitment to join it.
You're like,
full-time.
I'm in.
I was hooked.
So what is it, if someone asks you, like, what is your title? Like, what do you do? What do you tell them?
I mean, my official title is, I call it sales manager, but it just depends what day of the week it is.
I feel like you do a lot more than that.
Yeah,
I feel
exactly.
like you're also making wine, which we're about to
we
talk
do,
about.
We do. Yeah. So there's a trio of us that do all the winemaking, but I've tried not to, like, the things that I try and change and recommend are just small changes. We've got a really good portfolio and plan for each vintage that we make.
Uh-huh.
And if, things aren't broken, there's no need to fix it.
Yeah.
But there are slight changes that I like to make year to year. Every year, new products come out that seem interesting. So it's like, okay, maybe here we'll try something. If a new yeast comes out, that seems super interesting. We may try it.
You guys, we get really excited when new yeast comes out. It's like a big deal.
Yeah. But, you know, it makes me nervous as well because we've got such a good product already. It's kind of, you're like, you're taking a risk there.
So your degree's in business.
Business management.
And then, so obviously you learned what you learned being a part of the family as far as farming. And then winemaking as well, just being around it.
Correct. Yeah.
It's the best way to do it.
That's the best way. Yeah.
I learned online and through books and I knew all the numbers. And then it was time to start doing it. I was like, what am I doing? I think the thing that people don't really realize about making wine and this product that we all make, you get one shot a year. Mm-hmm. Now you might make, especially you guys have a nice portfolio of how many different wines, right? So you're practicing different things. But like for us, we make one wine once a year. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of practice that's happening with that. So it's slow to master, right?
Exactly.
But as I always say, and this is where your family comes in, it's like start with really good fruit and don't F it up.
That's
right.
I say that in the tasting room all the time.
Protected from oxygen. I call myself the shepherd. I'm just shepherding it along. It really starts with what you guys are doing in the vineyard.
Oh, truly. I mean, you start with a high-end fruit product, and then just, you know, there's a lot of ways you can overcomplicate things in that winemaking process, which does happen a lot. So as of now, 2024, we have 15 other wineries that we sell fruit to. A handful in Napa County and then the rest here in Sonoma County. So that's 15 different winemakers that we get to talk to and get different ideas from. And that's really, I love reading, love learning in online classes and, you know, constantly trying to find out new things. But talking to all these different people, that's where I actually learn the most. I love picking people's brains. I'm not shy about asking questions.
You're not shy. That's why you're on the podcast today.
You know, you can't have shame in asking for help. I ask for help all the time. You got to have resources that you can rely on. Our lab here in Hillsburg is great. ETS, they can get you analysis of everything, but then you have to figure out a way to analyze that analysis and diagnosis and figure out, okay, if there's a problem, what needs to be done.
What I always say this to Michael, because I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by a lot of mentors, whether I'm asking you and your dad questions, or Sally, who used to be the winemaker at Pride, or Matt, the current winemaker there, or Jim Duane, or Julie Johnson. Like, I have a lot of mentors because I started this very late in life. This is like a second career for me. And I have had to learn to swallow my pride and no pun intended, and ask for help, right? And I always tell Michael, he's like, well, did you ask Sally? Did you ask Matt? Did you ask Jim? Did you ask Joe? And I'm like, you could ask 10 winemakers the same question. You will get 10 different answers.
Right.
That's the beauty and the excitement.
Yeah.
And I'm like not a great decision maker. So then I'll like, you know, waffle back and forth. But that's what's so interesting is that, and we're going to talk about this as we taste our wines together in a minute. Essentially, when we talk about the Sangiovese, like we're starting with the same ingredient, literally from the same place, right? And then it's just the individual take that each winemaker is putting on it.
Well, just to put in a little different reference. So right now, the Sangiovese, this exact fruit goes to us, you guys, and then one other winery. Yeah. And we all make very different styles.
Yeah.
And they all get picked on the same day. So, I mean, you are literally starting with the exact same.
The chemistry is the same. The labs are the same.
As far as, I'm not sure exactly how your machinery processing goes. I'm not sure if you whole cluster or do run it through.
We de-stem and like crush.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're doing pretty much the same thing. I mean, you can use different yeast. You can use different enzymes. So there are different things you can use. But I'm sure our Sangioveses are within a couple points of alcohol each other. I'm sure that like they're very close to starting sugar, starting pH.
Yeah.
Acid, everything. So that's what makes it so.
It's so cool, right? Because that's where the variation comes in on this product.
Mm-hmm.
So, how does it feel to have this new space? I know it was. We don't have to get into the challenge that it was to get here, but let's just talk about how is it going in this new space? How long has it been open? And how do you think people
perceive
it?
Space itself is beautiful. We're in about a 3 times bigger space.
This is downtown Geyserville for you guys that don't know. Yeah. So north of Santa Rosa, north of Healdsburg, you're going into the Alexander Valley. And Geyserville is the cutest little, is it one stoplight? Is there even a light?
No light.
It's just stop signs.
No lights, no gas stations, no grocery stores.
And two of the best restaurants, if you ask me, in Sonoma County.
That's true.
Diavola and Catelli's. We're going to Diavola for pizza, by the way, if you want to join us. But it's the cutest little town. So you moved like 4 minutes down the road and now you're in this beautiful
spot. Well, we were very lucky to find this place. Yeah. Because the town is so small, I mean, you look down the street here, there's not real estate or retail space available. So we were very lucky to find this place. We are first-time tenants in this space. It's been vacant since it was been built in 2008, if you can believe that.
Wow.
So we were lucky enough to find the space. It needed quite a bit of work, but I think we were probably the perfect fit to come in.
Well, and you know, we're in your wine club. That's how we found you. We've been mm-hmm. here wine club for probably close to a decade. And the main criteria that we use, obviously, with joining clubs, working here, living here, and being the business, is it has to be great wine. Okay,
right.
Check. You guys have really fun events and parties. Like, you guys how to do it, whether it's the one up at your parents' home.
It's funny.
I feel like
my parents have been throwing parties like that before the winery and wine club was even a thing. I feel like they've been throwing parties like that since I was a kid.
Yeah,
that was an easy transition. Of course,
studying the whole time.
That top estate ranch is just such a gorgeous place. It's got that. So where our ranch is actually located, we're in Dry Creek proper, but we're on the east side of the valley looking west, if that makes sense. So we're on this beautiful steep hillside, hard, rocky, gravelly soil with a slight clay influence, but it's the main
you guys hear the nerdy farming part coming out. You hear the soil reference coming out. I love it.
The main aspect that makes that property so special for the grape growing is that it's this western-facing, western-oriented hillside. So the advantage of that is, especially in dealing with Sangiovese, that being on that hillside, the grape itself struggles immensely getting close to its harvest season. And what that means for the fruit is it's going to be extra concentrated, low yielding, but incredibly vibrant and flavorful. And I think that is one of the main aspects of growing Sangiovese, because it is, quote unquote, a lazy vine. It needs to be planted hillside. And the more drainage, the rougher the soil, typically it's going to create the more intense style fruit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys really do have the perfect site for it.
Those two side-by-side properties. Yeah. I mean, there may be one more that I can think of in Dry Creek that has a place like that for Sangiovese, but it's rare.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening and are not super familiar with this area in Sonoma County, so Dry Creek is what we call an AVA or an appellation, right? It's like an outlined area, and then certain vineyards and wineries fall within that, which is why when you see not only Ramazzotti wines, but also with Solovato, you'll see Dry Creek Valley is the AVA that's on the label. That is actually a great segue, I think, Michael, to the question that you had about where we are.
Yeah, so people ask me, you know, where your grapes are from. When we always say Dry Creek, and they're like, Dry Creek, you know, Sonoma County. So being a grape grower in Sonoma County, how do you feel the perception since you started growing grapes to now about the Sonoma County versus Napa?
Well, we've become much more well-known now at this point. Of course, Napa put California wines on the map, but the more people are, wine tourism is, you know, really got turned up, especially in the last 10 years. The town of Hillsburg, which is now the epicenter of Sonoma County wine tourism, winemaking, it is just exploded. It is just
Michelin stars.
Between Napa and Sonoma County, we have the highest concentrated area of Michelin star restaurants in the entire world. Not the U.S., the world.
And we're going for pizza tonight, guys? What are we doing?
Yeah. So the tourism here is worldwide. It's really incredible. There is quite a difference. Napa still has the name, and they can warrant the price tag on a lot of their bottles. But also, the wineries are paying ridiculous numbers for their tonnage, for their raw grape product. And
yeah, we know, we look.
Yeah, you know how it is. So they're paying so much more upfront for the fruit. So that obviously translates to higher per bottle costs. But besides that, the difference in the farm, the costs, what it is to farm in Valley to Valley is identical. So that's why Sonoma County grape growers, wine growers are really struggling, because we cannot charge the same dollar value per ton that Napa Valley is, and in a lot of cases we're growing
as good, if not better quality. Yeah.
And to be honest, Napa is actually a hotter AVA. So we're actually more versatile here in Alexander Valley in what we can grow. Dry Creek also is a very unique area because it still gets a little coastal influence even during the hot summer months. There's this mountain ridgeline behind us that almost keeps that fog and marine layer away from this valley. Mm-hmm. So Alexander Valley is pretty unique in that it can grow almost any variety you can think of.
Mm-hmm. There's so much diversity of these little microclimates here.
Exactly.
Because the coast, we're not far from the Sonoma coast here, but mm-hmm. then you have all these inland valleys, right, mm-hmm. where air is settling or generating more heat or whatever it may be. So it's really diverse.
And if you look at the map of where the outline is of Alexander Valley, it's very large. Yeah. I mean, it extends all the way down to almost Santa Rosa and yeah. then all the way to the Mendocino County yeah. border.
Thank you for reminding me that. I'll put a link in the show notes where people can look at a map just to get an idea of the AVAs of Sonoma County. We're surrounded by a lot of really cool places.
We are lucky, yeah.
Michael's like chomping at the bit to taste these wines, I think. So it might be time to segue into our tasting.
But also, I have another question because I
always get ahead, Michael. Get ahead.
You guys are pouring yeah. wines. I just have another question.
Yeah,
if you could pour and talk about this.
Yes,
because I always get asked this question when we're trying to sell the wine. They're like, Sangiovese, what is Sangiovese like compared to any other grape? And I always have a difficult because, of course, I haven't been in the wine business.
Because you like save lives for a living and stuff?
Correct. And how to answer that question. I always say, well, it's an Italian grape, it's... So anyways, how would you describe Sangiovese? Because I always tell people, it's a grape that's in Chianti. Mm-hmm. So how do you describe it?
So it's a medium body, medium acid, low tannin wine. But it can be made so many different styles. The Italian style is obviously going to be picked a little lower sugar, so it's going to be much more acid forward, less fruit, which is why it's able to age. That's where you're going to get your Brunello del Montalcino, these really aged Sangioveses. And I like to call Sangiovese the Italian's everyday drinking red because it is so soft, medium acid, medium body, like I mentioned, and it can go with literally anything or it can go with nothing. That's the best part. I mean, even the local Sonoma County restaurants that we do sell this to, it goes with every one of their dishes, or you can sit there and have it at the bar while you're, sitting and talking. Mm-hmm. It's such a diverse one. That's the beauty.
That's what we tell people of why we make it. A, because we love to drink it.
Mm-hmm.
B, because there's not a lot of it around, which mm-hmm. is why we're so excited to find you guys and partner with your family.
Mm-hmm.
But C, because it is so versatile. It's mm-hmm. right in the middle of the spectrum, like you said, as far as weight, body, acid, tannin, all of that.
There's only a handful of Sonoma County Sangiovese out there. Probably not for the better part of our sales, but I would love to see more Sangiovese planted just because I think this is such a special area yeah. for it. And I think there's just such a market for this style red wine because obviously Pinot Noir is such a, such a favorite amongst red wine drinkers for all of its qualities. I think Sangiovese has similar qualities with a little more softness and fruit flavor. And I think there's just a big market for California Sangiovese.
Yes, agree.
My gateway into wine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And then
this would be an easy gateway as well.
Right. Yeah. And then it's surging Sangiovese. But it's like still, I think it's what, about 4% planet Sangiovese in this whole region?
It's not, sure. Yeah.
Throwing the numbers out, Michael.
I did research some slow
numbers.
You did some research, mm-hmm. Travis. So let's do it. Let's try these wines side by side. Let's do our sip spotlight.
Sip spotlight.
So when Travis and I started talking about doing this, you guys, I think you're actually the one that suggested it. You said, oh, yeah, I would do the podcast with you. We should taste our Sangiovese side by side. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was your idea. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take credit.
Why wouldn't we?
I know. So we have the Ramazzotti label. We have the Solovato label. These are both from 2021, picked on the same day.
Exact same day.
And what's interesting is we know from talking, and we'll share this, that our processes are a little bit different, mm-hmm. which is the beauty mm-hmm. of the creativity of making wine. How do you want to attack this? How do you want to taste them?
So let's do the Ramazzotti first, because okay. I'm going to give everyone a little disclaimer about the difference of ours right off the bat.
Okay.
Do you know what it is? Is that we do
malolactic fermentation and different oak profile.
But even before all that is because we make a Zingiovese rosé, which is a Zinfandel Sangiovese blended rosé. So we don't make a separate batch of rosé, but we do saunier, bleed off a portion of the Sangiovese juice as soon as it goes into the fermentation tank.
To go to your rosé.
So we're talking usually about 200 gallons of the Sangiovese juice. So that in turn is creating a higher juice to skin contact ratio for the red wine. Because it does make a big difference.
It does.
But we're dealing with 5 to 7 tons where you're just dealing with 1 ton. It'd be impossible for you to.
We like more than one ton, but whatever. I'll take that up with your dad. Fine. And for those of you who are not familiar, that term that he used, saunier, that is a French word for blood. You're like bleeding, like mm-hmm. comes from the root of the word sang, saunier, blood.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me. So that is a big difference.
We
pick the grapes with you guys that morning. We put them in our trailer. We drive them to St. Helena, to our custom crush facility where we make them. They get destemmed and crushed right away and go into bin for fermentation. Mm-hmm. So no saunier, no bleeding off. So right away on the nose, when I have wines that I'm comparing, I like to smell back and forth between them before I'm even tasting. It's like they're related but different. They're like my sisters and I. There's like a common thread, but there's differences for sure on the nose. Tell me about your oak on this.
So for our lighter reds, which includes the Sangiovese, it's always neutral French. So you got to be very careful with anything giving any new oak, new wood influence on Sangiovese. It is very prone to really sucking up that oak flavor. So you can really overdo it. So typically beginning of the season, we'll buy about 100 to 150 neutral barrels. And we try and only use white wine barrels, uh-huh. either Sauvignon Blanc, but we try and shoot for Chardonnay barrels seem to be the best.
Uh-huh.
Just because they're not imparting much flavor.
So same.
Yes.
For us, with ours, same exact thing. Neutral French, our 2022 is actually in used Chardonnay barrels.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
We are very much on the same page.
Have you in any of your productions made the mistake of using a new barrel?
No.
Don't.
Because I knew enough coming from my wine background that.
And they're so expensive. There's no reason.
Yeah. We just bought our first brand new barrel this year, but it's not for Sangiovese. We're making some Petite Syrah.
Uh-huh.
That can handle some new oak.
Yeah. Yeah. Taste it periodically though, because that new oak is so dominant.
Oh, yeah.
We'll kind of go back and forth. We'll have wines back. All right, it's picking up too much. We'll take it out.
You can move it. Yeah.
We will go back and forth a couple times.
Yeah.
I think stuff is picking up too much.
It's intense. Yeah. But definitely we made that decision early on, even with our first vintage with your fruit 2019. Mm-hmm. We had one barrel. So it's not even like, oh, well, we're going to do 50% new oak. We'll do one new barrel and one used barrel and combine them. When you have one barrel and that's all you have, it's all or none.
Uh-huh.
So the answer was none.
Right.
The answer was, let's go super neutral and just get to know this wine and this vineyard.
I don't think you're going to want to do it.
We've not added. Now we're up to four barrels.
Especially the style you're doing here is so nice. I don't think you're going to do it.
We're not. So we're on the same page there. Okay. Michael, do you pick up any differences on the nose? He's already like halfway done with both glasses, you guys, by the way. But
it's because I'm not talking. They smell very similar.
They really do.
Mm-hmm.
Which shocked me.
Do you feel like if you didn't know which was yours and which was ours,
you can't put that question on me.
It's hard, right?
I drink this so often. I know this one. I can pick.
You know you're wine in your sleep?
I can pick that one out blind.
Do you feel like that about all your wines or about
this one? This one in particular, because I end up... Because this is probably our most popular wine that we sell.
That's how you hooked us.
I end up tasting it with so many of the guests that it's just like, I know it so
know
well.
It. That's awesome. I love that.
I do get a little bit more of the red cherry in ours than yours. But yours is more structured and it's got a much, much rounder mouthfeel. Where ours is a little more linear, which is kind of down the middle of the tongue. Yours is a little bit more on the sides.
Do we know why that is? Because we've talked about the difference in our process that changes that linear versus round mouthfeel. Let's see if Michael knows. And that difference is?
ML.
Yes, malolactic fermentation. So let's talk about that. You do not put this particular red wine through that secondary fermentation.
Part of our winemaking process that does change every year. Each vintage is completely different. We do very little malolactic fermentations on most of our red wines, especially these lighter ones. So after the grapes have done fermentation, been pressed off the skin, settled, and get barreled down, we see what our exact number of barrels are. And then we'll typically do 10%. Mm-hmm. 10%. So figure if we got 12, we'll do 2.
Because listeners, the secondary fermentation, if you go back to past episodes, I've talked about this, but malolactic fermentation, you're just converting the malic acid to lactic acid, which in turn really changes the mouthfeel. Like when he's talking about roundness versus when it hasn't gone through, it is almost like a little more sharpness in a good way, like brightness, sharpness in the acidity in the wine. And that's the difference between them.
Your winery practices have to be very spot on. Yeah. You have to be on top of your monthly topping, on top of your monthly sulfur adds. With the non-ML stuff, bacteria can take off.
It's more susceptible.
Yeah. It's more susceptible. Yeah. Can take off very quickly.
Which is also why we decided to do it, for just that stability factor, right, being new at right. this, right? Michael, right. you're raising your hand. Go ahead.
I did notice, to me, you think the ML changes, you said acid has the taste or feel, mouthfeel of the acid. Yeah. So do you, because to me, that's what one of the biggest differences I feel is just the way the acid feels in my mouth.
Correct.
You feel like the ML.
Flavor, mm-hmm. taste, quite similar.
Similarly, right. Mm-hmm.
But texture, feeling, finish.
Mm-hmm. Where the acid hits in my mouth.
Where the lactic acid is soft. The lactic yeah. acid is softer. So yeah. it's, you know, it's changing that, what the style of acid that your tongue is. Yeah. is.
So the acid dealing. Might not be higher, or
it's just different.
It's just different. That's what I was basically saying. So,
yeah. How cool is that? Because they do finish very differently. I mean, they're both gorgeous, right? Like, we are nerding out where we're like, this is 10% ML and this is 100, like, blah, blah, all of that aside. These are two beautiful Dry Creek Sangiovese's, neutral oak from the same place.
The tannins should be about the same.
Once you're dry and your fermentation's complete, are you leaving on the skins, or you're pretty quick to press it off?
Oh, very. Once it gets into that below
-1, -2
is what we're usually. If we can get under 0, we're pretty good. Usually, we'd never have any problems with the Sangiovese and going -1 down to -2, which is great. And then we don't leave it on those skins at all. We press it right off.
Same for us.
Yeah.
So like we're usually like, just get it in the barrel.
So we let it settle for about 2 days, 2 to 3 days. I think our protocol says 48-hour settle time.
And Michael, then, they have a protocol.
And then in...
Do we need a protocol?
You need a protocol.
I'm going to get an iPad.
We do need a protocol.
Oh, I mean, it's just ours on a nice little good old Excel sheet. So don't worry. We're not that fancy. It just keeps our organization.
Oh, especially nice with how many wines you guys are making.
Oh my God, Nikki, I can't even tell you how many lots we did last year. It was, we overextended ourselves by a lot. That was insane.
Your catalog is how big right now?
Sometimes it's 13 up to 16, you know, depending. Sometimes we have a sparkling. We just don't have a sparkling right now, but usually it's about 15. 15 is about right. But I've got a Dolcetto coming on. I've got a new Italian white coming on. We're constantly adding.
Because you got a couple of different grapes now that you never used to do, right?
Right, right. The new Italian white coming on. We're just about to bottle at the end of this month. Is called Vermentino.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful northern Italian variety.
Nice.
I cannot wait.
It's so good with oysters.
Ours turned out so interesting. It's got this darker golden color to it, and it is gorgeous. I'm very excited.
So, oak, stainless.
Half and half.
Okay.
All of our whites and rosés follow the same protocol.
the P word.
Half stainless steel, 55-gallon barrels, half 60-gallon neutral French oak barrels.
Okay. Yeah. All right. As you're going through the portfolio, this is not really a listener question, but more of a listener comment. But Joan from Tennessee wrote in and said, please tell him that I love his Refinto Super Tuscan.
Yes.
Do you want to tell our listeners about that?
So Refinto is an Italian word for, it's an Italian proprietary name for one of our blends, meaning refined. It is our Sangiovese-based Super Tuscan blend. So that's a pretty fun wine to make year to year because it's labeled red wine, so it doesn't have to be varietal designated. And we always start with the 50% Sangiovese base and then build it from there. So it's always...
And then the party starts.
And then we get to be creative. So it always starts 50% Sangiovese with Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah, and Cab Franc. And those percentages vary year to year depending on what the Sangiovese wants. And we always let it kind of drive where we go. But typically it's more heavy on the Cabernet, and usually less heavy on the Cab Franc, the Merlot, and Syrah kind of fill in where they need to. 2 years in neutral French.
Well, thank you, Joan in Tennessee, for sharing your passion for that. Yeah, you guys just have such an interesting portfolio and lineup of wines, and that's what drew us to your wine club in the first place. What I've noticed, and tell me if you guys agree or disagree, is as these have sat in the glass and opened up in the last 15 minutes that we've been talking, the differences between them, and this is just on the nose, the differences have been minimized.
Right.
So initially, when they first hit the glass, they were quite different.
I was getting almost like a mentholated aspect to yours, like this herbalness.
Mentholated a word? Did you say mentholated?
I think it is a word, right?
It's a word.
Menthol? Menthol?
Mentholated? No, I like it. I'm going to use it. Mentholated.
We use that word when we're blending.
Mentholated. Uh-huh. On ours or on yours?
On yours. And it is...
This is fun to be like, is since, my wine or your wine? Ours
has since
mine.
Gone away. And you are right. They've become more...
They're more similar now,
more
right?
Similar now after being in the
some
glass.
Of those secondary notes kind of... simmer down as the fruit comes forward,
mm-hmm.
and the fruit comes forward, and we know that this fruit is the same fruit.
Right.
It is a word.
Right? Mentholated?
It is a word.
Dude, pound it out. $10.
In the nice. Webster Dictionary.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for fact-checking over there. Before we move on to our last question, any other thoughts or impressions just about tasting these two beautiful sister wines side by side?
I was so happy that we got to taste the side by side vintage. I don't know if you and I have ever done that. And I was just commenting earlier how I love your labels. Who you guys get to do your label production?
Shout out to Trisk. Our good friends Hobie and Justin connected them with us, and mm-hmm. they do a killer job. And we are still hand numbering every bottle.
I see that.
Because we make a small enough amount mm-hmm. where even though it's a pain in the ass,
and
we can still
do it. And then this bottle, what would you call this with this little hitch at the top?
It's called a bar top.
To me, it's literally a nightmare. But you guys don't use foils, so you're not going to have to worry about
it. We don't use foils. Instead, we do the hand wax that you saw when you had
it. Because you had to order 10,000. You know how long it would have taken us to use 10,000 foils?
We had these beautiful foils like years ago when we started the 19, custom design. They were like ombre. There was like four different gradients of color from the top to the bottom. And we're like, yes. And then we went to place the order. Our first year was one barrel, 2019, 286 bottles. And they're like, when you order foils, it's a 10,000 minimum. We're like, that's like 9 years of wine. So we didn't do it in the first year and we did the wax. And now for multiple reasons, A, aesthetics, mm-hmm. B, I think a lot of people are starting to move away from foil, mm-hmm. just from a waste, from a just extra hassle.
I know.
Have you thought about it?
You see the naked bottles out there all the time. I've worked so hard on all the artwork of mine now that now I'm kind of committed.
Well, can we just talk about what a cool last name you have? Like, it kind of just belongs on a label.
It does.
I mean,
it does.
And Solavato, Ramazzotti, like they're kind of like sisters.
What is Solavato?
Solavato is Italian for uplifted, joyful, relieved, no longer worried.
Got it.
Is what that translates to.
And how'd you decide that?
Oh, gosh. It was a process. And we knew we wanted it to be in Italian, mm-hmm. just to pay homage to not only my heritage, but the grape. But everything that we would plug into Google Translate, especially we were starting this project right after the fire. I think we lost our home in the Tubbs fire mm-hmm. in Santa Rosa mm-hmm. and Coffee Park. So we were like, what if we named it like From the Ashes mm-hmm. or the Phoenix? We were like inspired by this trauma we had been through. And then you would plug that into Google Translate in Italian. And it was like a sentence long, like, mm-hmm. Della Fattore, da 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 da. I was like, that can't go on a label. Mm-hmm. No one's going to be able to say it. So our friend actually was searching and came up with this word, and it's very phonetic. Like when you look at it, Solavato, it's easy to say.
It rolls off the tongue nicely.
And it talks about joy and uplifting, which we love. And then that sort of secondary definition, which is relieved and no longer worried, mm-hmm. that is kind of a tribute to where we are now on the backside of the shitstorm that we went through mm-hmm. with fire and rebuilding and all of that.
Oh, it's nice. I never heard that story.
Yeah, it's cool. So they're beautiful together. Okay, we've taken up enough of your time. So I have one last question I want to ask you, and then we'll wrap it up. This is a question that was recently posed to me and really got me thinking, and I did a whole podcast episode about it last week. So I'd love to know, why is wine important?
Well, especially growing up with the Italian culture, food and wine were always together, and food and wine with people and shared experiences was always so important. And so wine, just to me, wine is memory and it's experiences and it's people. So when I'm here, especially in the tasting room, and I'm talking with people and they are enjoying the wine, I'm telling them about our experiences, our story, I'm creating one experience there, and then they're going to take that wine with that shared experience and share it with their loved ones and their friends and their family. And so it's just what it's when people tell me they've seen these wines all across the U.S. and they've had these experiences, like that's what makes it all worth it. And that's what all the hard work and the ups and downs,
all the protocols.
Well, it's just like, you know, all the stresses, you know, family business is not easy.
I feel like we could do a whole nother episode about that.
I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it.
We love you, mom and dad, but
it is very difficult.
We deal with it enough, just Michael and I, at a micro level.
So what does wine mean to me? I mean, I've known about wine since I was probably 5 or 6. I probably had my first glass of wine in dinner when I was probably 8.
I love that.
Yeah, this, you know, the little Italian style water glass.
Did they water it back for you a little or no?
Absolutely not.
Yes!
That's not Italian. That is not
Italian. Italian would never put water in wine.
Don't worry. I had plenty of relatives that put water in their wine. I was just like, what are you doing?
I love it.
It's like ice cubes.
That was always part of it. It was always wine bottles on the table was family and friends and, you know, gathering. And so it just is part of sharing with people.
Because I tell people a lot about, even at Pride, where I've worked for many, many years, they're in the second generation of ownership and kind of thinking about what that third generation may or may not do. Do they want to be a part of it? And there's so many second generation that's you, right, whose parents started this, who are like, I don't want to be a part of that. I could do a million other businesses on this planet and make a lot more money in a lot less time with a lot less risk and a lot less headache.
Right.
So I love that you're here. I love that you chose to be a part of it. I love that you went and got your business degree and you were like, no, this is what I want to do. Like, is this it? Are you in it?
Oh, I mean, not turning back now. I'm too invested in this thing now. So,
and you're so good, you do now.
No, you could always change, but no, I'm an example of that.
You can always change.
I'm very invested in it, and I love doing all the different parts of it. I mean, it is a full time job. Even on days off, there are no days off. You're always doing something. You're always following through with a project, corresponding with people. I mean, the only way at this size is everyone has to do a lot of different jobs. Like when you're asking what my title was earlier, and that's technical.
I'm like, sales manager? No, you need a new title.
Yeah, no. Yes.
Well, what I love and what I encourage people who are listening, who are coming on vacation in the area or live in the area like us, what has always been so cool is when you come to the Ramazzotti tasting room, it's either you, your mom, your dad, your aunt. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you have a couple of employees, right? But 9 times out of 10, it is your family that is pouring these wines for people.
Either that,
that's amazing.
That's just when you get to see us. That's the end point and end sale point.
Yeah.
What they don't see is that either my dad or I have probably touched that wine or that product at least 2 or 3 times in its life, whether it be the, you know, the actual wine making in the barrels, but also we're there on the bottling line. Mm-hmm. We're there in the warehouse pack. Like if you're receiving a shipped package from us, there's like a 90% chance one of our hands are putting in the box.
Yeah.
We do all the packing ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's UPS, FedEx, it goes right out of our facility. So, I mean, everybody does a lot of different jobs.
It's amazing, but it's a labor of love, and it's expressed in the glass. And I think more and more now people are looking for the smaller family places where a small amount of people are touching the product from every step from the farming to pouring it at the bar. And that's what's so unique about you guys, and that's why we love you. So.
Oh. So much.
Thanks for staying late at the end of a long day to do this with us and drink
not a problem.
Mediocre wines side by side. Michael, any finishing thoughts before we sign off?
I just want to say thank you for your time. And also, it's always great when we see you out and, you know, when we go out there in the mornings. And for us, it's only been since 2019, but it does look every time you're out there when you guys are picking, it's you're happy and it's you're enjoying it because it's
well,
like,
it's your Super Bowl, yeah. Right? When yeah. you see a harvest, like wait, that's your Super Bowl.
Well, you know, Sangiovese gets picked. It's a fairly early red yeah. ripener, so you're seeing us at the beginning of the season. Remember when you
that's
saw
like
us?
The playoffs.
Remember when you saw us picking the garage? Much sadder.
Yeah.
Much sadder. Much more broken.
Especially 2023, where stuff took forever
much
to
much more broken and defeated. No spirit left. Yeah, that's.
I don't know. You guys
no, but even that day you were great. I'm just saying, it's just like it's you guys. Just Joe is just like talking, and it's just I love just talking yeah. to your father. And he just so much wisdom and so much expertise.
We're just so grateful that yeah. we connected with you guys, and we really feel like we were able to start this because of your family. Oh, because we knew amazing. We wanted Sangiovese. We worked on your dad for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, please sell us half a ton. Please sell us a ton. And it all worked out. And we hope to continue the relationship and being able to make these two really cool wines. Well, cheers, you guys. This was so
cheers.
Fun.
Yeah,
oh, you
not,
need.
I ran out
oh, so his glasses were empty. Right, and I just cheers. Want to tell you guys, he reached for another bottle to fill one, and he reached for the Solovato.
Cheers with an empty glass.
He reached for the Solovato.
Everyone, come out to Geyserville. Come out to this
yeah,
beautiful
place. Yeah, please. One last, our last little plug. Our address here is a 100 Schoolhouse Lane here in beautiful Geyserville. RamazzottiWines.com. Check out our website. You can see our story, all of our wines online there. Or you can call or email us. Our email is info@RamazzottiWines.
And your Instagram handle is?
Ramazzotti_wines.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Two Z's, two T's. RamazzottiI.
That's it.
Two Z's, two T's.
That's it.
Cheers, friend. Thank you again.
Cheers.
Appreciate
salute
your time.
To Nikki and Michael.
Salute.
Thank you guys.
Time for pizza.
Yeah. Time for dinner.
What a special, special evening that was. I mean, so cool to really spend that time talking with Travis, diving into their family history, hearing about his experience, experiencing their beautiful newly opened tasting room, and of course, tasting two gorgeous, similar but different Sangioveses next to each other. Such a cool experience. I'm so grateful that we're able to do that. If you live in wine country or you're coming to this area, I really want to encourage you to visit their tasting room, meet the family, meet Travis, Joe, Norma, Marie. They have a wonderful team. Their wines are fantastic. And their portfolio, as we mentioned, is really diverse. They make a lot of different wines, a little bit of a lot of different wines, and they're fantastic. You can visit them at RamazzottiWines.com. It's got two Z's and two T's, RamazzottiI, RamazzottiWines.com or Ramazzotti_wines on Instagram. And just encourage you to check them out. Look in the show notes. I'll put a link with that Sonoma wine AVA map that we referred to. And as always, we want to thank you for being listeners. So if you are interested in trying our Solovato Sangiovese, we'll put the link in the show notes and you can use PODLISTENER as a discount code for 10% off your wine order and we can ship it right to your door. And if you'd like to support the podcast, there is a link in the show notes to do that. We would be ever so grateful. Sip well.